Blog Talk Radio.
At the behest of the other six businessmen, went to Washington to see Abraham Lincoln and ask him if he could start a school for black children. And basically, Lincoln approved it, and I guess one of the reasons why he would have been involved is because it was to start in the barracks of a church, which had been a barracks used during the Civil War.
Okay. Think we may have been experiencing some technical difficulty. I won't know until after the show is over.
Okay.
But we need to recap just in case we miss the first 5 minutes.
Okay. So you want to start over?
Yes. In essence, let's just go back to who you are. And, you know, why out of all the people in Parkersburg, West Virginia, why do you think I'm speaking to you about this great school?
Okay.
And who are you?
Okay. My name is Toni Oliver. I am a former teacher. I'm involved in the Sumner Wright Alumni Association because, basically, I call it my mother's baby. She started all the way back in 82. The school had been closed after 1954 and then had been reopened. But the bottom line is that my mother and other businessmen here asked the Board of Education if they could use the school because it had been closed. And basically she wrote grants and had the upstairs gutted so that it could be used as a community room for banquets or whatever. And then the downstairs is pretty much a photographic library of Sumner School students and the community at that time.
Okay, could you tell us the name of the school?
The school was Sumner. It was called Sumner High School. And it was named after Charles Sumner, who was an abolitionist in the Senate. And Preston Brooks was an anti-abolitionist, and he beat Charles Sumner with a cane so badly that Charles Sumner had to retire from the Senate for 3 years before he could come back and participate. And so the school was named after Charles Sumner. Now, the person who went to Washington I guess I should back up. The western part of West Virginia did not want to secede from the Union. The eastern part did so. So for a period of time there, there was no government in on the western side of West Virginia. So between, he went to see Lincoln in 1861, and this school opened in the beginning of 1862, January 1, 1862. As a matter of fact, we're celebrating our 150th anniversary of its opening.
Wow. What do you expect to have? How are you guys going to celebrate?
Well, basically, we did have a celebration, and we invited some of the other black schools from West Virginia to come, and we not only presented the history of Sumner, but they also presented the history of Garnet, which is in Charleston, West Virginia, and Kelly Miller, which is in Charleston. So we got a feel for three different locations at the schools that were going on at that time. I have found out since then that there were 38 black schools at that time, so three is just, you know, just a few of them. And when we had the presentation, the people that came from Charleston were very interested and planned to come back and would like to try and organize a bigger reunion involving, if we possibly could, all 38 of the schools.
Would you please inform me, because I would love to be a part of that celebration. I think that's very important for African Americans today to know that education was part of our liberation and that we were the forerunners of free public schools.
In fact, when they opened the school, January 1, 1862, it not only was the first black school south of the Mason-Dixon line and, of course, in the western part of Virginia, but it was the first public school in West Virginia. They did not have a school system until a couple public school system until a couple of years later. And because they founded the school in the interim between before West Virginia became a state, it is definitely the oldest school for blacks established that early. There's none any earlier than that.
Now, being a teacher yourself, how does that make you feel, knowing that the misnomers that African Americans, you know, perform poorly in the current school system, but we were the leaders of public education. We had schools before the white society had schools.
Right, we did.
So, you know, how could this be flipped in history books? And, you know, don't you think it would impact our students in a positive way if they knew the history that we were the ones who thought public school systems were important to everybody, not just us?
Well, I think it's important for everybody, not just us, to learn. But basically, in this day and age, it's really hard to get the younger people interested in a project like this. Some people think that they have to be the alumni of Sumner, which is not true. But basically, it's just that the people who actually attended Sumner are definitely all in retirement age. And we're struggling to keep going because we don't have a lot of young people that are interested in trying to help us out. But we've been going. My mother passed in 2005, and my Aunt Frances and I promised her that we would try and keep everything going, and we have.
Now, I was thinking, because I'm also a high school teacher, young people, unfortunately, are really in sports. And if there's a way you can merge sports with your, you know, with your museum, I think that's one way. You know, you have to dangle that banana in front of them to get them to come through the doors. And I think sports, you know, maybe having a league or sponsoring a team in a league is one way to bring young people in. Have you thought about something like that?
No, I haven't, but American Legion, there was a black American Legion and a white American Legion. They both still exist, although they both have black and white members. And they have sponsored a ball team. But to be quite honest, it kind of petered out. They didn't have the participation that they needed. In the museum, one of the rooms is dedicated to sports and entertainment, and has a lot of pictures of the cheerleaders and the different teams and that kind of stuff. So we do kind of, you know, it is there, and anybody that comes to visit says they just can't believe it, that nobody knows that it's there. But it's about a collection of 3,000 photographs. Some of them were donated to us, and a lot of them were loaned, and my mother had them copied, and so that they're there. So it's primarily a museum of photographic material. There are a few artifacts, but it's mainly the pictures of Sumner School from way back when till it closed in 54.
Now, why did it close in 54?
Okay. That was as a result of the Brown versus the Board of Education. And in our state, although not all of the black schools, I understand, happened, but in our state, this county tore down the black school in that summer, 54. And the idea was, I'm told, is so that the black kids could not go back there because there was some resentment on the part of the whites. They did not want the school to be integrated.
You're the first one to say what I always suspected.
Beg your pardon?
You were the first one to say what I always suspected was the reason why our schools were shut down.
You know, and I've heard that since I've been involved in doing some research and whatever. But the bottom line was, what they did was the very semester after the board versus the Board of Education, they sent the first graders and the ninth graders to the white public schools. And then the following fall, the rest of the student body merged into the white public schools.
Now, why do you think the mass media has placed Ruby Bridges as the main story to depict what happened with Sumner School and 90% of all of our black schools, as this is the history of our school, when what you just said is completely opposite, where they forced our students to go to a white school, whereas Ruby Bridges, she fought her way to go to a white school.
Okay. Well, like you say, it was forced. Where the museum is that in 1929, they added a gymnasium onto the school. And it was a state-of-the-art museum. I mean, gymnasium. And the floor was so nice for the basketball boys that the white team from the high school, PHS, came down and practiced on the gym floor, our gym floor. So when they tore down the school building, the gym remained.
Mm-hmm.
And then what the Board of Education did was basically made it two stories, because before it just had a stage and it was, you know, a big open gymnasium, so that it had two floors and there were classrooms upstairs and classrooms downstairs, and of course it had a kitchen. When it was called, I always thought it was a derogatory term, but I read in the paper that they referred to it as Sunshine School, which was for handicapped kids. That Sumner, for a while, before 1982, was a handicapped school. And then what they did was they built a state-of-the-art school for handicapped children, and it left Sumner blank or empty. And then we had some businessmen, including women this time, including my mother, who went to the board and asked if we could lease Sumner for the association. And they did let us do that. And then not long after that, they allowed they sold it to us for a dollar. So basically the Sumnerite Association is the owner of the building. Now, when my mother
really
came in,
that story really saddens me. I mean, it really breaks my heart, because here in New Jersey we have a similar story with the Bordentown School, but it was first transformed into a handicapped school for the handicapped, and now it's a prison, a juvenile detention center, and it's 400 acres, and the people who live there, when I did a talk about the school, the history of the school, many people that have been here for generations, African Americans, did not know that that prison, the juvenile detention center, was once a great historical black school.
Oh.
I mean, it's something that, and I'm learning this story how all over the country,
mm-hmm.
They took our history and literally buried it, demolished these buildings, and then act as if we never had anything to do with our liberation through
right.
education. And now they want reform, and they act as though they have no clue how to reform inner city schools. And with that comment, I'd like to ask you, what is the demographics of Parkersburg? Is that the name?
Right. Parkersburg, I wouldn't want to say the blacks have been apathetic, but basically it has been a community. There's only, there were originally like 40,000 people in the area. That definitely hasn't grown, and it has decreased somewhat. But the population of black population of Parkersburg was about maybe 1.5%. Now in the state, it's about 3%. Black population in West Virginia is very, very low. Mm. So
the little history you do have was destroyed. Maybe.
Well, it wasn't completely, because my mother and others basically brought back as much as they can. I mean, if you visit the museum, you get a definite feel for what it was like. And there's even a room on that has pictures of the churches and the hotels and the businesses that blacks owned back then. And then the entertainment. There was like a group that, a singing group that sang on WTAP way back when it was just starting a TV show, and they sang every Sunday morning, sang gospel music.
Has anyone come in as far as a director of anyone from the industry, the film industry, to document your story? Because this is very, very important. I mean, this part
know.
Of our history has to be told, and told by someone like you and your family, and you have all these pictures. I mean, I have to make a trip up there. My mother and my grandmother are from Beckley, West Virginia. How far are you from Beckley?
Well, see, Beckley is one, I'm not sure what was Beckley. It might have been Bluefield. You know, they're at the bottom of the state. And it's my understanding that not all of the schools integrated right after the board versus the Brown investigation. That some of them did not do it in 54, 55, you know, and I'm not exactly sure when they did do, but I do know that a couple of the schools in that area, which is right on the Virginia border, did not integrate their schools as quickly. And as I said before, in doing research and this celebration that we had, I found out that there were 38 black schools in West Virginia before that.
Now, are there any books or any films about the story of Sumner High School or black schools in general in West
No, Virginia? Not that I know of. We're a nonprofit agency. We have we get very, very little money. And, of course, the money is not to pay bills. We can get grants for projects. And
so
and
when
that.
Are you going to start the book?
When I can end up paying all the bills on time. I mean, basically, you know, that's it. We're, like I say, my mother started and had the upstairs where the rooms were added, gutted, and it's a big community room. And we have banquets and dances, and we serve the families of a funeral after the funeral, you know, so there's a big enough place to hold all the relatives and so forth. And with birthday parties, you can rent it at a reasonable cost. And then for the things like meetings for an organization or wakes, we don't charge anything for that.
Okay. Now, I know a few historical black places like Sumner, they use a publishing company called Arcadia Publishing Company. Are you familiar with that?
I've heard of it. I'm not that familiar with it.
Well, I strongly advise that you go online and visit that site, and they will help you write your book. and put it out there because I think this is an international story that needs to be shared. And anything I can do to help help you promote what you're doing and preserving your town's history and our history and your mom's dream, I'm willing to do.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that.
Yes, yes. Now, those pictures, do you guys have a website where you can share these pictures?
We have a website, but all of those pictures are not on it. There are a couple and a little bit of background about Sumner. But to be honest with you, that basic big projects like that, I just don't feel comfortable trying to start on my own. I'm not my mother.
I don't blame you.
She'd do it in a minute probably if she were still here.
Right.
My aunt and I are keeping it open. Our main thing, or her main thing, was to establish a free tutoring program. And basically, we still do that. We will, upon request, we'll take any child from K through 12 that needs help in any subject. And we're still doing that. She started that back in 1988, and we're still doing it.
Wonderful.
In fact, we have, when she recruited teachers, for the tutors, I mean tutors, teachers as tutors or whatever, she went to, let me think what it's called, it's a government agency. Big. It moved here from Washington and brought a lot of black people in, so our percentage could be a lot harder. And then the plants of DuPont and GE were here. And so between the community college and those two plants is where she got her volunteers. And there were three men who are now retired that have been working with us for 20 years. And they're great because they're the ones that do the chemistry and the biology and all the higher math. So, you know, we had some commitment from the community, and we've been able to keep that going.
Where is the nearest HBCU, Historically Black College or University?
Say now what again?
So where's the nearest Historically Black College or University?
West Virginia State in Charleston.
Okay.
That's about 100 miles below. It's about an hour. A little
do they know about your school and what you're doing in the museum?
I don't know that. Well, that school is integrated also, and believe it, it's not. I'm not saying it's a terrible thing, but it's more white than black now, so there's not as many people there that would be as interested. But it's close, and I don't know that anybody specifically from West Virginia State has visited us, but I'm pretty sure that they're aware of it.
What was the original name of Virginia State? Do you know?
West Virginia State.
Even when it was found, was it found by black people, or was it?
It's a black school. It's considered one of the black historical schools.
Okay.
That was the one that was in West Virginia, and I'm trying to think. I'm not thinking. There's a couple over in Ohio, and that are close. And then I don't know anything about any of them in Pennsylvania.
Now, if your mother was on the line being interviewed, what are the things you think she would be the most proud of when she talks about her memories and experience at Sumner?
She would be most proud of the tutoring part, which is something that she felt, you know, that was needed. Unfortunately, we have more white kids than black kids, you know, availing themselves of the fact that they can come. But that's typical in Parkersburg also, with the smart population. But, you know, we are still continuing it. But basically, she should be proud of the whole thing. The upstairs room was dedicated before she left to her as the Ray Brown a community room.
Was she a student at Sumner?
Yes.
Okay.
So was I, but I was.
Oh, okay.
She graduated from Sumner. I was one of them that had to integrate into the white schools after the 54 decision.
Wow.
And there weren't that many of us left.
Tell me, you are our little Ruby Bridges. Tell us, Ruby. How was that? You know, let's go back to when you discovered How did you find out? How did your parents tell you that this was about to take place?
I don't remember, to tell you the truth. I don't remember being specifically told. One of the reasons why I knew something was happening was because I lived about three blocks from the school, maybe three or four. And the neighborhood, although black people lived all over the county and had farms and different things, there were a few areas that where blacks were concentrated, but not not all in one place. That's assumed that, you know, everybody was in this one little area, and they weren't.
Mm-hmm. So what happened the day? Do you remember your
okay,
first day
so what
school?
Happened is that I was going up. It's on Avery Street, and I knew I had some friends up there. And like I say, it was only like three blocks, so I was old enough anyway, but there weren't any lights or anything or having to cross any streets. But I was going to a friend's house, and by the fence was a trash barrel with all the trophies and things from Sumner just thrown in the trash to be hauled away.
Whoa.
And so from that point of view, I've been involved quite a bit. I saw them. It wasn't locked, the building. I could still get into the playground area where the trash was. And I took several of them back to my house, and then my two aunts came back with me, and we got the rest of them. But the principal, he didn't end up being a principal in the white schools, but he was an administrator over absentees and that kind of thing. But they didn't, evidently he didn't know, or he hadn't been told, because, like I say, they were in the trash, and, you know, they were just gutting the school to tear it down.
Oh, my God. What was the mood?
Beg your pardon?
What was the mood like? Do you remember your parents gathering, having like a PTA meeting or a meeting? Do you remember
no,
any kind of
no,
reaction?
No. No, and the other thing is, I don't know exactly how this is going to sound, but, for example, I didn't really know there were places that I couldn't go when I was a child. I mean, because maybe because it was just, I can give you the best example in the world, is that I always sat upstairs in a movie. And now I prefer the mezzanine, you know, up one level.
Okay.
And I didn't find out until they said that we could go, that we were allowed to sit downstairs in a movie. You know, so as far as I knew, I was going to the movies, and I didn't realize there was any kind of restriction, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
Now, I did know we could not go in the city park swimming pool. That had to come a long time
Jim
after.
Crow.
Beg your pardon?
This is what we call Jim Crow.
Yes, yes. But we didn't have as much of that here as in some of the other places in West Virginia. What I'm trying to say is it was easy not to be aware that there was a difference. One of the things that makes me the most sad is that when the school closed, it was the heart of the community. I always said that, you know, we had essentially four black churches, which are all integrated now, but we had four churches, and the people who didn't go to church, but everybody went to Sumner. Halloween, there would be a big party, and I mean, the parents and the kids would come, and the Christmas plays, and movies. It was just the center of the community. And we had a complete community as far as we had doctors and we had dentists. We had everything basically we needed. Store owners. We had a skating rink that was run and owned by a black person.
What do you think your mom and you would say to Thurgood Marshall and Charles Hamilton Houston today, if they could have changed things about Sumner? How do you, you know, what advice would you have given them to say, you know, we want integration.
Right.
But we also want our school. You know, how
right.
would you have articulated that?
I don't know that, I think that we have articulated it in the fact that as part of what we do, we offer presentations for schools that come in like the community college always has a diversity class, and they always have their students come over. And then some of those students will offer to volunteer as far as tutoring is concerned. I think basically that what she has done is what she would have said a long, long time ago, that this needs to be done. Like I say, this was just basically her dream. She wasn't the only one, but it boiled down to that it was a one-woman show, and basically, you know, she handled all of it.
Okay, what would you ladies say about educational reform, especially, you know, you are from, like, it sounds like a semi-rural area.
No, we're in the city, just not a very big city.
Okay.
We're right on the river, right across from Ohio.
Well, I'm from Paterson, New Jersey, which is
a
very large city.
No, this is small.
Right.
And, in fact, I live in Vienna, which is right next to Parkersburg, but it's not counted in their population. You know, it's just like a little suburb. You can't tell when you move from one to the other unless there's a sign.
Okay. Now, you know, there's a lot going on in the news right now with the movie Superman about education, urban education. What advice would you give to President Obama and his education commissioner about how to reform schools, looking back at your experience that summer?
Oh, well, I don't know that I would need to go back that far. I have been absolutely appalled at the No Child Left Behind, and I am hopes I'm hearing that they're possibly going to rescind that and do something differently, but that is the biggest mistake that they could ever make. Basically, that's one of my soapboxes. Everybody knows there's a bell-shaped curve. Everybody should know there's a bell-shaped curve. So you got a middle, and you got a high, and you got a low end. And that's the way the people's intelligence is across the board. Low Child Left Behind wants everybody to be able to pass and have average grades. Well, the kids that are in the lower end intellectually, genetically, cannot do that. And it probably wouldn't be as bad if they didn't make the school systems include the special ed children in the numbers, because that definitely is going to bring them down. And because they're not ever going to really get up, if they get up to a C, that's great. Consequently, I think that's the reason that you're finding cheating in schools to make the test grades grow up and all of that, because it really can't be done easily and legitimately. Because
good,
of the other end.
Do you think anything good came out of the No Child Left Behind? Anything positive?
It's my understanding. I can't see any positives coming out of it. I really can't. I just can't. Because it's based on a bald idea. I mean, you have those kids that are going to be C's, D's, and F's. Not necessarily, I'm using grades, but I'm talking about intellectually. We have kids that are, you know, gifted and above 130, and we have kids that are average at 100, and we have slower kids that, you know, are around 60 and 70. And you can't really get those kids up to a C level. And basically that's what the No Child Left Behind was doing. Everybody's supposed to be able to equal, everybody's supposed to be able to do everything. And that's not possible.
Do you think that the accountability factor has improved or helped the students out in any way?
No, because the teachers, it might be helping the students because the teachers are helping them cheat.
Ooh.
I mean, really, there's a whole lot of that in the news, you know, where school systems, where they can prove that the teachers have gone back and changed answers and done all kinds of things to get those scores up high enough so that they qualify or are not qualified to be left out. Not on probation, I guess. They have schools that are on probation. And if you don't meet that level of No Child Left Behind, you're on probation and you have to make improvements so that you can go back and be certified. And, again, it's asking a little bit of the impossible. And so, consequently, I'm not surprised that places that they have teachers that have been doing that. That's a sad state of affairs.
Would you appreciate if they made the test more progressive to say that as long as you are showing some kind of improvement, would you appreciate it if they made those types of changes?
If that's if that's where they would let it go, I'm still thinking of the other end of the lower end of the continuum. We want everybody to do the best that they can do, but everybody can't do the same thing as everybody else, and that's the problem. But
so if you had a D student come in and you were able to move that child up to the C level, don't you think a system that would appreciate and applaud the teacher for making that improvement should get the equal merit as far as a teacher who was able to get a B student to an A?
Yeah, I think that they could, but I think that's kind of not what the problem is. I mean, I know what you're saying, but I'm still going back to that lower end of the bell-shaped curve. There's only so much you can do. I can also give you a better example in that in West Virginia, gifted education is mandated. It has been mandated since 1978. And the one good thing was that we were under special ed and we got funded as special ed. Now, in West Virginia, they give you and allocate money for different things, but the county can use it for whatever they want. Okay, so then, therefore, a lot of the money didn't necessarily go to gifted. And so you have that problem of the money not supporting the program. The other thing that ended up, and one of the reasons why I retired early, I put 33 years in, but I could have stayed a lot longer.
Oh, now I understand why you feel so strongly about it.
Yeah.
Dana did do a lot of cheating because you're already retired. Okay.
Well, I mean, and it's not, I haven't heard about the cheating here in West Virginia or at Sumner.
Mm-hmm.
But the IEPs, when, as I said, West Virginia mandated gifted in 1978, and the county sent me to Columbia University for a workshop.
In New York City.
In New York City, right. And anyway, let me back up and see what I'm trying to say here. I asked them at that meeting, how do you write an IEP? And they didn't know what I was talking about. I'm talking about the gifted people, the ones that wrote the books and whatever. Just in 1978, they did not know what I was talking about in New York City, about an IEP. They had no clue. And basically, that's what ended up making our program watered down in a way, because they tried to make us write an IEP for our gifted students the way that you would write one for the other end of the continuum. If somebody can't say the sound or whatever, you can put that down and say they'll be able to say that. Well, yeah, that's not what gifted needs. Although we want to have them pursue their strengths, like whether it's math or language or whatever, there are other things that they need to be really using their abilities. And that, for example, we did independent study. We didn't have a computer where you could go get everything on the Internet. We took them to the library. They had projects they had to do, and their projects had to have low goals and also high goals, you know, at the top, so that we were sure that we were stressing critical skills and that kind of stuff, and also in creative thinking. I once had an argument with a person at the state level that I said that you could teach creative thinking, and believe it or not, about 5-10 years later, she came back and told me she could see what I was talking about. But basically, if you understand in creative thinking that there are different ways, different things that you can elaborate, for example, or add on to or whatever. In other words, you can take an idea and then add to it, manipulate it, and do better with it than just not. And, I mean, you have to know what the things are of creative thinking to be able to do that. And there's many of those as there are the areas of gifted, you know, which is... Like,
well, it sounds like you and your mom have been successful in taking the Sumner School and preserving its history through the museum. So I think you demonstrated that you guys are gifted. Would you not say?
I'll say if I was a child, I was precocious.
Oh, okay. Well, I really enjoyed this conversation. you know, we tied in at the end what's going on today in the schools in general, and we also, of course, talked about the Sumner School. And could you just leave with a final word and also your contact information?
The whole thing?
Yes. Well, you know, we want people to support what you're doing.
Well, I think first step would be more publicity and advertisement of what's there.
Okay.
Every group that we come, making them aware that it's there. And then once they're aware that it's there, then they find it's something worthwhile looking at and finding out about and getting involved in. So I'd say that's where we are right now.
How can they contact you if they want? If someone's listening and they want to support you, send you a $1 million check. How would they be able to contact you?
This school number is 304-485-1152, but we're not there full time. So the easiest way would be to connect to call me or my aunt. My number is 304-295-9639. And her number is 304-422-0985.
Email?
Email tloliver1@frontier.net. Nope, .com. The other one was net.
Website?
The Sumner School.
.org?
Mm-hmm.
Sumnerschool.org. That's
S-U-M-N-E-R. Yeah, Sumner.
.org. All right. Well, thank you, Ms.
Actually, I think it might be Underwood County.
Okay. All right. Well, just in case, let's repeat your email.
T-L-Oliver, O-L-I-B-E-R, 1@frontier.net. .com. I keep saying that. My other one was net. They keep changing who's got our email.
Okay.
And frontiers.com.
Frontiers.net.
Frontier.com.
Oh, .com. Okay. It's Frontier.
It was Verizon.net, for example.
Right. I mean, I'm Verizon.net.
Okay.
All
we're
right.
Frontier.com.
Now, you will promise to stay in touch because I want to come down to see that 38 Historical Black Schools conference. I want to be involved.
Okay. Well, we just mentioned it when we had this meeting just a month ago. So we've thrown it out there. And we're supposed to get back the ones who were there and try and get that done. But it's going to be a major undertaking.
Well, I will be in touch with you because I want to interview some of those key people that are going to be organizing that major event.
Okay.
All right. So thanks again, and have a great night. And I know it took a lot for you to get involved, and I really do appreciate you taking the time on your busy schedule.
Okay.
All righty.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.